Welcome to Learning English on the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Today on the program, Ashley Thompson and I take you to a national park in Utah. We also hear a classic American story by O. Henry. But first, we have some news stories from Marcia James and Brian Lynn.
Former Philippine President Ferdinand Marcos was buried Friday with military honors at a cemetery for national heroes. His wife, Imelda, and their children attended the burial at Cemetery of Heroes in Manila. A police official told the Associated Press that Marcos's body was flown to the capital Thursday from his home province of Ilocos Norte. The official described the burial service as a simple family ceremony. Family members and military officials followed the body as it was taken in a horse-drawn carriage to its final resting place. The ceremony included a 21-gun military salute. Imelda Marcos was given the Philippine flag that covered the coffin. The burial was kept secret from the public. Groups representing victims of Marcos's rule opposed having his remains moved to the cemetery. Other former presidents, military leaders, and artists are buried there. No protests were reported at the cemetery, where thousands of riot police and soldiers stood guard. But protesters gathered in other parts of Manila. Some burned pictures of Marcos. The Philippine Supreme Court approved the burial, which President Rodrigo Duterte also supported. Several groups had gone to court seeking to stop it. Marcos ruled the country for more than 20 years. His administration was accused of widespread corruption and human rights abuses. Family members have denied wrongdoing during his rule. Marcos was removed from office in 1986 when the army supported what was called a people power rebellion. He later fled the country. Marcos died in 1989 while living in exile with his family in the American state of Hawaii. In 1993, his body was flown back to the Philippines. I'm Brian Lynn.
Although Hillary Clinton did not become the first woman to be elected president of the United States, there are now more female state legislators than ever before. Beginning in January 2017, about 1,824 women will serve in the legislatures of the 50 states, the highest number in American history. That is 24.7% of the more than 7,380 state House and Senate seats. In 1992, 20% of state legislators were women. By 2015, 24.4% of them were. A record number of women were candidates this year for state legislative seats. The legislatures of Arizona, Colorado, Nevada, and Vermont have the highest percentage of women. Mississippi, Oklahoma, West Virginia, and Wyoming have the lowest percentage. About 20% of the members of the U.S. Congress are women. Women make up a little more than half of the U.S. population. However, the 2016 election did not bring the big change in the number of women in politics that some people expected, says Debbie Walsh. She is the director of the Nonpartisan Center for American Women in Politics at Rutgers University. She recently spoke with the Washington Post newspaper. For all of the talk of this being a change election, it was not a change election for women in politics. We just aren't seeing enough of them, she said. The elections did bring some first for female lawmakers. Starting in January 2017, 38 non-white women will serve in Congress. That is a record number. 35 of them are Democrats and 3 are Republicans. Democrat Catherine Cortez Mastro of Nevada will be the first Latina to serve in the U.S. Senate. And Stephanie Murphy, a Democrat from Florida, will be the first Vietnamese-American woman in Congress. All of the members of the U.S. House and Senate from the state of New Hampshire will be women. Voters in Minnesota elected the first Somali-American state lawmaker. Voters in Kentucky elected its first black female legislator in 20 years. 40 Native American Democratic state legislators were also elected in states throughout the country. Only 2 of the 50 American states have never elected a woman to serve in the U.S. House or Senate: Mississippi and Vermont. The new Congress will be the most diverse group of American lawmakers ever. However, about 80% of its members will be white males. White men are about 31% of the U.S. population. I'm Marcia James.
The state of Utah is home to 5 major national parks. They are among the most famous parks in the United States. This week, our national parks journey brings us to the southeastern part of the state. Here, you will find narrow canyons, steep cliffs, and hidden river valleys. Welcome to Zion National Park.
Zion sits within a desert landscape. The 260-kilometer-long Virgin River runs through it. It provides water for more than 1,000 kinds of plants to grow and over 100 kinds of animals to live, including the desert tortoise, desert bighorn sheep, and mountain lions. River Water has also carved out the area's spectacular canyons and gorges. One of them, called Zion Canyon, stretches more than 20 kilometers through the park. In some places, it is more than 600 meters deep. At its most narrow point, it is just 6 meters across. Zion is one of the 10 most visited parks in the country. Travelers from America and around the world come here to explore its canyons, climb its steep walls, and walk its dramatic trails.
Zion's extraordinary beauty affected early Mormon settlers. Members of the religious group came to the area beginning in the 1850s. They thought it looked like heaven. They named the land after a place from the Bible, Zion. Zion means sanctuary or refuge in ancient Hebrew. Mormons were not, of course, the first people to explore the area. Experts say humans first arrived around 12,000 years ago. They hunted very large animals, like mammoths, giant sloths, and camels. Climate change and overhunting caused these animals to die out about 8,000 years ago. Humans changed their methods. They hunted smaller animals and gathered other food. Some 2,000 years ago, a culture centered on what we now call Zion began to form. Scientists know these people as the Virgin Anasazi. They settled in the area and grew crops. They used the water from the Virgin River and depended on the rich diversity of native plants and animals. Over time, many Native American groups called the area home, including the Southern Paiute. The Southern Paiutes called the area Makuntuweap. In their language, the name meant Straight Canyon. The United States Congress moved to protect the area beginning in the early 1900s. In 1909, it became a national monument. It was called Makuntuweap National Monument. President William Taft established the national monument. He described the land as a labyrinth of remarkable canyons with highly ornate and beautifully colored walls, in which are plainly recorded the geological events of past ages. In 1918, the National Monument became a national park. And in 1919, Congress changed its name to Zion, the name used by the Mormons.
Today, almost 3 million people visit Zion National Park each year. Driving is restricted in much of the park during busy months. Instead, visitors travel in small buses that take them to areas where they can walk on paths into the wild areas. Walking is the best way to explore Zion. The park offers visitors many different kinds of paths. Some are short and easy. One easy walk is almost 2 kilometers. It takes hikers to a clear pool of water and waterfalls. Other hikes take most people all day to complete. Some are not advisable for people who are afraid of high places. A hike called Angel's Landing is considered one of the most exciting hikes in America. The trail leads to the top of a rock formation that stands more than 450 meters above the canyon floor. Toward the top of the rock, the walking path becomes extremely narrow. On both sides are very steep cliffs. Hikers can hold on to a rope for increased safety. Most hikers say the views from Angel's Landing make the difficult and dangerous experience worth it. Some visitors favor the lower parts of Zion National Park. One popular area is known as the Narrows. The Narrows is the narrowest part of Zion Canyon. The area has extremely tall canyon walls and unusual hanging gardens. These green areas of wildflowers, ferns, and mosses grow out of the sandstone walls.
Even near the canyon floor, hikes at Zion can be dangerous. The great amount of rock in the area does not absorb water. As a result, sudden floods, called flash floods, are a serious threat. People can help prepare themselves as much as possible for the dangers of Zion National Park at the Visitor Center. But the risks come with great rewards. As the famous American pilot Amelia Earhart once said, adventure is worthwhile in itself.
Two Thanksgiving Day Gentlemen. There is one day that is ours. There is one day when all Americans go back to the old home and eat a big dinner. Bless the day, the President gives it to us every year. Yes, Thanksgiving Day is the one day of the year that is purely American. And now here's the story to prove to you that we have old traditions in this new country. Stuffy Pete sat down on a seat in the New York City park named Union Square. It was the third seat to the right as you enter Union Square from the east. Every Thanksgiving Day, for 9 years, he had sat down there at 1 p.m. Every time, things had happened to him. They were wonderful things. They made his heart feel full of joy. And they filled another part of him, too. They filled the part below his heart. On those other Thanksgiving days, he had been hungry. It is a strange thing. There are rich people who wish to help the poor. But many of them seem to think that the poor are hungry only on Thanksgiving Day. But today, Pete was not hungry. He had come from a dinner so big that he had almost no power to move. His light green eyes looked out from a gray face on which there was still a little food. His breath was short. His body had suddenly become too big for his clothes. It seemed ready to break out of them. They were torn. You could see his skin through a hole in the front of his shirt. But the cold wind with snow in it felt pleasantly cool to him. for Stuffy Pete was overheated with the warmth of all he had had to eat. The dinner had been much too big. It seemed to him that his dinner had included all the turkey and all the other food in the whole world. So he sat, very, very full. He looked out at the world without interest, as if it could never offer him anything more. The dinner had not been expected. He had been passing a large house near the beginning of that great broad street called Fifth Avenue. It was the home of two ladies of an old family. These two old ladies had a deep love of traditions. There were certain things they always did. On Thanksgiving Day at noon, they always sent a servant to stand at the door. There he waited for the first hungry person to walk by. The servant had orders to bring that person into the house and feed him until he could eat no more. Stuffy Pete happened to pass by on his way to the park. The servant had gathered him in. Tradition had been followed. Stuffy Pete sat in the park looking straight before him for 10 minutes. Then he felt a desire to look in another direction. With a very great effort, he moved his head slowly to the left. Then his eyes grew wider and his breath stopped. His feet in their torn shoes at the ends of his short legs moved about on the ground. For the old gentleman was coming across Fourth Avenue toward Stuffy's seat. Every Thanksgiving for 9 years, the old gentleman had come there to find Stuffy Pete on his seat. That was a thing that the old gentleman was trying to make into a tradition. Every Thanksgiving Day, for 9 years, he had found Stuffy there. Then he had led Stuffy to a restaurant and watched him eat a big dinner. They do these things more easily in old countries like England. They do them without thinking about them. But in this young country, we must think about them. In order to build a tradition, we must do the same thing again and again for a long time. The old gentleman loved his country. He believed he was helping to build a great American tradition. And he had been doing very well. 9 years is a long time here. The old gentleman moved straight and proud toward the tradition that he was building. Truly, feeding Stuffy Pete once a year was not a very important tradition. There are greater and more important traditions in England. But it was a beginning. It proved that a tradition was at least possible in America. The old gentleman was thin and tall and 60. He was dressed all in black. He wore eyeglasses. His hair was whiter and thinner than it had been last year. His legs did not seem as strong as they had seemed the year before. As this kind old gentleman came toward him, Stuffy began to shake and his breath was shorter. He wished he could fly away, but he could not move from his seat. "Good morning," said the old gentleman. "I'm glad to see that the troubles of another year have not hurt you. You continue to move in health about the beautiful world. For that blessing, you and I can give thanks on this day of Thanksgiving. If you will come with me, my man, I will give you a dinner that will surely make your body feel as thankful as your mind." That is what the old gentleman said every time, every Thanksgiving Day, for 9 years. The words themselves were almost a tradition. Always before, they had been music in Stuffy's ear. But now he looked up at the old gentleman's face with tears of suffering in his eyes. The snow turned quickly to water when it fell upon his hot face. But the old gentleman was shaking with the cold. He turned away with his back to the wind, and he did not see Stuffy's eyes. Stuffy had always wondered why the old gentleman seemed sad as he spoke. He did not know that it was because the old gentleman was wishing that he had a son. A son would come there after he himself was gone. A son would stand proud and strong before Stuffy and say, "In remembrance of my father," then it would really be a tradition. But the old gentleman had no family. He lived in a room in one of the old houses near the park. In the winter, he grew a few flowers there. In the spring, he walked on Fifth Avenue. In the summer, he lived in a farmhouse in the hills outside New York. And he talked of a strange bug he hoped someday to find. In the fall season, he gave Stuffy a dinner. These were the things that filled the old gentleman's life. Stuffy Pete looked up at him for half a minute, helpless and very sorry for himself. The old gentleman's eyes were bright with the giving pleasure. His face was getting older every year, but his clothes were very clean and fresh. And then Stuffy made a strange noise. He was trying to speak, as the old gentleman had heard the noise 9 times before. He understood it. He knew that Stuffy was accepting.
"Thank you. I'm very hungry."
Stuffy was very full. But he understood that he was part of a tradition. His desire for food on Thanksgiving Day was not his own. It belonged to this kind old gentleman. True, America is free, but there are some things that must be done. The old gentleman led Stuffy to the restaurant and to the same table where they had always gone. They were known there.
"Here comes that old man," said a waiter. "It buys the old no-good fella a dinner every Thanksgiving."
The old gentleman sat at the table watching. The waiters brought food and more food, and Stuffy began to eat. No great and famous soldier ever battled more strongly against an enemy. The turkey and all the other food were gone almost as quickly as they appeared. Stuffy saw the look of happiness on the old gentleman's face. He continued to eat in order to keep it there. In an hour, the battle was finished.
"Thank you," Stuffy said. "Thank you for my Thanksgiving dinner."
Then he stood up heavily and started to go to the wrong door. A waiter turned him in the right direction. The old gentleman carefully counted out $1.30 and left 15 cents more for the waiter. They said goodbye, as they did each year, at the door. The old gentleman went south, and Stuffy went north. Stuffy went around the first corner and stood for 1 minute. Then he fell. There he was found. He was picked up and taken to a hospital. They put him on a bed and began to try to discover what strange sickness had made him fall. And an hour later, the old gentleman was brought to the same hospital. And they put him on another bed and began to try to discover what his sickness could be. After a little time, one of the doctors met another doctor, and they talked. "That nice old gentleman over there," he said, "do you know what's wrong with him? He's almost dead for the need of food. A very proud old man, I think. He told me he has had nothing to eat for 3 days.
I'm Katie Weaver. That's all the time we have today. Listen tomorrow for another Learning English program on the Voice of America.